The chair now calls this ALA Council Executive Board Membership Meeting Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy A.4.2.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any member of the association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only, and no action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at annual conferences. It is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Courtney L. Young, ALA President-elect, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance, and I would also like to introduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, who keeps us in order. Where is she? There she is. Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist is Heather Theriak. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. Today's agenda, ALA Council Document 8.4, revised 6/26/14, 6:45 p.m., along with other council documents, are available at the back of the room and also on ALA Connect. I'm now pleased to present my president's report, which is ALA Council Document number 21.1. And I'm going to just briefly, you have the report, but it's so much a part of my life that I want to just tell you some of the highlights that I've experienced this year. I started the year with the theme of libraries change lives. I truly believe that, and I have been amazed at how much that resonated with librarians, with library patrons, with city officials, with everyone that I came in contact with this year. Much of the work this year was shepherded very wisely by my two co-chairs of my advisory committee, Patty Wong and Maribel Castro, and I just want to publicly acknowledge the truly miraculous work they did all year long. I also want to acknowledge Marcy Marola and the Office for Library Advocacy, because we worked collaboration all year long, and she always stepped up to the plate. Literacy was one of the three areas that I wanted to emphasize during my presidential year. And certainly a huge piece of literacy is the work that is happening on electronic content. And I want to commend the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group for their continuing work to make e-books accessible at a reasonable price. They are going to be continued for another 2 years under new leadership, but the leadership that we had, Sari Feldman and Bob Wolven, did a wonderful job of keeping that work on the forefront and making steady progress. I think all of you all have noticed. Yes, absolutely. I think all of you all have noticed the miraculous progress that we have made over the past 3 years in establishing solid relationships with publishers, and it was due to their leadership. The task force will be continued for another 2 years under new leadership, because Sari and Bob said it's time for someone else to assume the reins of the new leadership. And they have a new agenda, and I think we will continue to see great progress in that area. Another area of literacy that I just wanted to mention is that we now have a new ALA literacy officer, and we will start to see a lot of pulling together of the literacy efforts that extend across our association. And now to the public, we're going to put a really good face on, of course, libraries and literacy are together, and we will have that public face. Innovation was the second theme that I worked on all year, and there are several things that happened in that realm. I particularly focused on two areas, makerspaces and TEDx, and I think maybe you have seen some of the webinars and some of the work that we've done in both of those areas. I know that I have enjoyed the interviews that I've had with reporters all the way along, and I mentioned the changing role of libraries and how the innovative practices are permeating all kinds of libraries, and they go, "Makerspaces? Oh," and I explain it, and they get truly excited by some of the things that are happening. What I try to help them understand, and what every librarian understands, is that we are really making our libraries places of creation, not just consumption of information. The third area that I focused on is community engagement. And I believe all of you all know that we have a two-year project, The Promise of Libraries in Transforming Communities, which we are doing in collaboration with the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. And it is funded by a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We have selected a cohort of 10 libraries, but we also have four sessions at this conference on turning outward to lead change. I hope you can attend one of those. We had a really great one that was this morning on aspirations, and the others are at various times during the conference. There is also a lot of tools available, and there will be a continuing amount of tools available on the ALA website to enable all of us to be facilitators of community engagement. And of course, there is the Declaration for the Right to Libraries. We launched it last year at this time, and it has had a steady growth in acceptance across the country. I'm just blown away by how many people have taken the declaration to heart, have had signing ceremonies and discussions and conversations in their local communities with their legislators, their mayors, their governors, national legislators, school boards. All of those entities have been contacted, have signed the declaration, and we garnered over 100,000 signatures from signing that we knew about. But on my way over here, I had a hard time getting here because I kept getting stopped by people who said, "I love the declaration," and one person said, "I meant to email you and I didn't, but I got over 2,000 signatures in my little library on the declaration." She said it was the best thing that she's ever done as a professional. The declaration will continue to be available. Courtney has said that she will support that. It will continue to be available online, and I hope all of you all figure out, will this work for me in starting a conversation with my local community about what the library means to them, the value and impact that the library can have? One of the most empowering things is that people have had to sign. It was a physical, they had to step up and say, "Yes, I'm standing up for my library," and it has really changed some attitudes in communities. There's even one library that's using it as the basis for a millage campaign. So there's a lot of ways that you can use it locally. Certainly, you can sign the declaration at this conference if you haven't already signed it. I've only signed it 3 or 4 times. Well, sometimes you need to, but in the membership pavilion and also at the ALA booth, I believe there are copies available for you to sign, and certainly you can sign online. Leadership development has been continued. It was started by Maureen Sullivan, and there is another cohort that has been selected. There will be a training in August, and happily enough, it will be facilitated by the two facilitators who were stupendous last year, ALA past president Maureen Sullivan and ACRL content strategist Catherine Dice. They absolutely must have done a terrific job, because everything I have heard about it is phenomenal. So leadership continues to be a focus of ALA. In May, we held a summit on the future of libraries. You know how you get an idea and you say, this is going to be important and we're really going to work at it. Well, it took a lot of hands. The two co-chairs of the summit were Pat Smith and Julie Todaro, and they did yeoman's work to plan and organize a summit that involved both librarians and non-librarians in May, meeting at the Library of Congress, presenters from outside of the library field who were charged with delivering some provocative comments about the trends that they see in the future in technology and education, and the demographics of our society. We all know we're confronting a lot of changes, where some of them are quite challenging, and yet, as we envision the future of libraries, we need to consider what the implications of those changes are. We've issued a summary report, but we will continue to build on the rich dialogue that happened at that summit. The purpose of it was not to answer questions, but not to answer the questions, but to generate the questions. And indeed, we did generate a lot of questions. That what happened at the summit and all of the conversations that we've been having will feed into ALA's Center for the Future of Libraries. We've been having lots of discussions about that here. I hope you've been engaged in some conversations about what you want to see out of there. But we do have a new director, Miguel Figueroa, who many of you will recognize. He's back at ALA, thankfully. We're very pleased. And great plans on using this as an innovation space, as a place to look at trends that we need to consider in libraries, research, a collection of best practices. We have a lot of ideas, and they are forming and will continue to form, so we invite your input into that and participation when we have focus sessions and other opportunities for you to engage. Advocacy for school libraries was exceedingly important this year. You all know I'm a school librarian. It is my heart, because I have seen the eyes of children. I see what school libraries do. And it is breaking my heart that school libraries are being marginalized in many of the communities in our country. We need to stand tall as a library community. The ecology of all types of libraries working together is what is going to support our communities and our nation. We've done a lot this year, a lot that I'm discovering you don't even know about. We've been sending letters and writing op-eds and everything we could think about. We now have a great plan, and this will continue. So I invite all of you all to participate, to support school libraries locally, but not school libraries as an entity. We don't want to talk about school libraries per se, but what they do for kids. And this is essential for every one of our children as they're growing up. We also, this year, formed a task force on equity, diversity, and inclusion. And many of you know that it came from initial provocation, maybe is the right word, by BCALA, concerned about our meeting in Orlando in 2016 and the Stand Your Ground laws. We worked together, a lot of us, all of the ethnic affiliates, various committees, and a huge number of members of ALA, and we developed a charge for the Task Force on Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. It will be chaired by Trevor Dawes and Martin Garner. I can't think of two better chairs. I think it's going to be really substantive work, and we're focused on how to really make a difference in ALA, in our profession, and in our communities. We need to stand tall about this, and now is the time. So I invite all of you all to participate however you can and make sure that this is a very strong effort and that we do it right. And don't consider whatever we do at the end of 2016 when the task force ends. That's not the end of it. That's the beginning of a very strong stance in for equity and inclusion and diversity on the part of ALA. We also, as a board, worked through strategic directions for ALA. And this is important. We've been talking about reimagining ALA. Many of you have been engaged. Well, I know you've been engaged if you're on council. We had council sessions. We had information sessions. We had division leadership. We've had conversations at a number of conferences. And what we did is we pulled all of that together and decided that this is wonderful, rich, and yet we need to focus. If we're going to move ahead in a strong way, we need to have some focus. We have three areas of strategic directions that we're going to be developing throughout this year, and we'll actually, there's a plan, an initial plan for how we're going to engage the whole library community with that. But we're going to focus on advocacy, information policy, and professional and leadership development. And I think next year at this time, we're going to have made a lot of progress in those areas. And finally, I just wanted to give you some final thoughts. It's been a fulfilling year. It's been interesting and challenging, and I had no idea what it was going to be when I started the year. I started the whole thing with a statement of my beliefs. And what has really been wonderful for me is that all the work that we have done together is a fulfillment of the things that I believe deeply about libraries and librarians. And I can tell it's a shared belief because people have been so willing to invest in the various things that we've done. I can tell you that the support of the ALA office and Keith Michael Fields and Mary Geekus and all of the departments and offices in ALA, that's been the difference, that it is member-driven. Our association is member-driven, but without that ALA staff, we wouldn't get very far. So I offer great kudos to them. And I would just like to encourage all of you all to continue to be engaged. I personally have a very positive attitude about life, and I believe that if you set a goal and you work together, that you can get there. And I know we can get there. And the future is exceedingly bright for libraries. I know it is, and I know we're going to create that future together. So I just want to thank you for the honor and pleasure of being your president. Are there any questions? All right. Hearing no questions. Oh, yes. Microphone 5.
Good afternoon. Alexia Hudson Ward, Executive Board. There's been a lot of excitement, and rightfully so, over the Special Presidential Task Force on Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion And I've received several questions today as to how people can become involved, and also is there an opportunity for others to be appointed to the task force?
Thank you, Alexia. I did. We held the task force to 15 members, and we wanted to be sure that there were representatives from each ethnic affiliate, from the Committee on Membership, the Committee on Diversity, from ASCLA, from CERT, from, I don't know. We had this list of entities within ALA that we needed to be sure that we were paying attention to. GLBTRT was another. And so that took up almost all of the committee, but I did get some people who volunteered, and so I was able to appoint two or three people who volunteered. That committee has been appointed, so we will no longer, unless someone drops out, we won't appoint anyone else to that committee, because if you get much over 15, you can't get work done. On the table, you have a list of those who were actually appointed. I don't want to speak for Martin and Trevor, but we have spoken together. So I will tell you that there is a very genuine effort. There will be a genuine effort and a continuous effort to seek input and to provide many opportunities for people to get involved. And so they're meeting for the first time at this conference. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I know that they consider that very important and know that we have a lot of interest and expertise in our association. Microphone 5.
Thank you again, Barbara. Just one piece that kind of came to me, and it was something that I didn't even think about, and I think it's just something for us to kind of put collectively into motion, is that Coswell nor mm-hmm. any of the other feminist organizations are currently represented on the task force. And since equity got included, there has been a lot of kind of good conversation around pay inequity. And so, you know, was that going to ultimately be a part of this group as well? So I just wanted to put that out there, not to put you on the spot, but just to, you know, share the conversations that are going on.
Yes, and I've gotten gender inequity and some other aspects, and every time I get a comment like that, I've been forwarding it to Martin and Trevor. So they are taking a very comprehensive understanding of what they're talking about, and I think it's going to have a pretty broad range. I don't know exactly what, but they're beyond just a very limited view of what they're talking about. All right. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 29.1 and call upon ALA President-elect Courtney L. Young to present her report. Courtney?
Thank you, Barb. Good afternoon. You have my report, and I apologize for the fact that the report that falls before this is an executive board document, and I'll make sure that actually that's sent out so that you can see a report between the one that you saw at midwinter and the one that you're seeing now. I'm only going to highlight a few minor pieces. With regards to committee appointments, you have in Council Document 31 and 31.1 all of the appointments for the committees, and I would like to thank for the council committees, the Committee on Committees that I worked with, and for the ALA committees, the ALA Committee on Appointments, for their assistance with that. The Career Development Facilitators program is moving forward. It was posted on the chapter's lists. I know that we already have 3 applications in, and I look forward to receiving more of those. The deadline for that is April 15th. For those of you who are representing chapters, which we all do in some way, shape, or form, to encourage your chapters to submit applications to have participants in that program to take place during the midwinter meeting in Chicago. I will also mention, in terms of the Digital Content Working Group, since I'm working on appointing the members for that group, I can tell you that the 2 co-chairs for that 2014 to 2016 appointment year is going to be Carolyn Anthony and Erica Linke, and they will help to move us forward in that work with regards to digital content under that new charge. I would be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Are there any questions for Ms. Young? All right,
thank you.
I will now refer, oh yes. I will now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23.1 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, to present his report. Keith?
Thank you, Madam President. As Barbara said, you have a copy of my report to Council and Executive Board. This represents a good cross-section on a regular basis of what's happening around ALA. And I hope that this is something that is valuable to you and do invite you to share it. I know that people do find it helpful. I'm going to talk about a couple of things that are sort of around the edges of the report. In two instances, I'm going to just build on something that Barbara talked about. First of all, let me start out by, instead of waiting till the end of the meeting, want to report that the advance registration for Las Vegas was 11,159, and that's compared with 10,310 in Anaheim and 13,533 in Chicago. So we've actually are coming in very strong on this conference, which is something that is just great. I want to talk a little bit about membership. At this point, the membership count for ALA is about 56,637. It is down slightly from last year by about 500, roughly. The personal membership dipped just a tiny bit. Most of the decreases that you're seeing are in organizational memberships, particularly those of small public libraries. And one of the things that we are doing is looking at what we can do, and we're doing some special promotions to try and make sure that we keep an attractive package of benefits for smaller libraries. The membership in general is actually tracking at about the level of employment in the sector. So the percentage of people working in libraries who are ALA members has actually remained pretty steady. What we've seen is an overall decrease in employment in the sector. We see signs that that's turning around and are looking at ways in which we can continue to build membership. At this point, about half of all students in library school are ALA members, and we currently have 9,000 student members of ALA. So one of the things that I think is a frequent myth is that ALA tends to have more older members and younger people are not getting involved. Statistics do not bear that out. And in fact, what we're seeing is that among younger librarians, the percentage that are ALA members is actually higher than for mid and late career professionals. So I think that those are some encouraging signs. We have a number of divisions that have had membership increases, and about two-thirds of ALA members at this point are division members. I want to talk a little bit about, Barbara talked about our strategic initiatives, and I would like to ask you to draw your attention to Council Document 41.6. I'd say the pink one, but they're all pink. And this one is called Planning and Budget Assembly, Division and Roundtable Presidents, ALA Executive Board Council, and ALA Members. And it's a memo from Barbara and Courtney that talks about our strategic planning over the course of the next year. And I want to just maybe just elaborate a little on Barbara's comments. Our current strategic plan, which is the familiar 2015 plan that was approved by Council in 2010, is in its last year. We're increasingly operating in a changing environment. And one of the things that we're looking at as part of the reimagining ALA is what does ALA's next generation plan need to look like? And we are very much interested in working with the membership over the course of the year, and I'm going to just talk a little bit about what that means, to look at what the plans of the association need to be going forward. All of you are familiar with what are listed as the key action areas in our current strategic plan, and those are advocacy, diversity, education and lifelong learning, equitable access, intellectual freedom, literacy, organizational excellence, and the transformation of libraries. Let me say that I think that we are rather confident that insofar as those are core values of the association, I think we can be very confident that we will be staying the course and that as things have changed, that our core values continue to remain very steadfast. In the document, which is the memo, you will see what one counselor has described as a spiffy diagram. And that's Karen Schneider. I give her credit for that. And what the diagram talks about is that over the course of this year, we're really going to be trying to reach out to membership, as we have in all of our previous strategic planning efforts, in a variety of ways and providing a variety of venues for people to talk about ALA, about our future plans. And in particular, we're interested in our membership thinking on what does advocacy, the next generation advocacy, need to look like? What does the next generation of information policy need to look like? And what does the next generation of professional leadership development need to look like? We're having kitchen table conversations at this conference and at midwinter. We will be scheduling a working session of council at midwinter, similar to some sessions that we've had in the past, to give you an opportunity to actually roll your sleeves up and share your thinking with us. We'll be providing for face-to-face forums at the chapters, and for those of you that are chapter counselors, we hope that you'll be active in potentially serving as facilitators or in helping to help those occur, our affiliates, and also a whole series of virtual engagement opportunities over the course of the year. And we'll be working with incoming President Courtney Young to look at some creative ways of involving members who may not be participating in face-to-face discussions. The goal on all of this will be to look at what our vision of advocacy, of information policy, and of professional leadership development needs to be going forward. We will both, over the course of this period, be fleshing out next-gen plans in these three areas, and at the same time, we'll be working to bring back to Council next year at this time ALA's new strategic directions. And as I say, I think you will find that many components will be very familiar to you as councillors, and that what we will be providing is a vision that will help guide us forward over the next coming years. So the emphasis really is on engagement, on trying to reach out to members, and trying to make sure that as we start thinking about the future, we have your best thinking. So we will be asking committees, divisions, roundtables, and various groups to schedule a time at midwinter so that we can have an amount of time spent at midwinter by various groups thinking around these three areas and about ALA's strategic directions going forward. I'm going to then just talk very briefly about the Center for the Future of Libraries. The Center for the Future of Libraries really came out of a conversation with the Institute for Museum and Library Services. For those of you that are keep an eye on the museum side of things. The American Alliance of Museums has had a Center for the Future of Museums now that goes back into probably about 20 years and does an annual trends report. And they've been very successful at bringing in trend information from outside of the museum field, and in the same way that we're looking to bring in trend information from outside of the library field, what are the things that are coming down the pike that are going to impact our communities, are going to impact our libraries, and are going to impact our profession? So we see this center as being a clearinghouse for interesting about some of the thinking about what lies around the next curve. The second function will be to begin developing training opportunities so that libraries can begin to include futures-oriented thinking into their planning processes. Things like scenario generation, there are various techniques that are used to help libraries think more futuristically. Very often we're working on what's the budget for the next year. The goal is to get libraries looking ahead at their communities, what trends are impacting us, and how can we anticipate them for the future. The last area, and Barbara talked about that, is the whole idea of trying to create a more vibrant innovation space. We constantly talk about or let me put it this way, I hear a lot from people about some sort of a sandbox or a creative innovation space within ALA. What can we do to help to promote and stimulate innovation? What we're hoping is that under the umbrella of the center, we will begin to make progress on figuring out how we can become a more effective catalyst in promoting innovation in libraries. Barbara's talked about advocacy. We are having some conversations at annual conference around the topic of the next generation of advocacy. We do see that the Center for the Future of Libraries, along with community engagement and public awareness, are important foundations to advocacy. One of the things we know from the old OCLC study now is that we're burdened by this public perception that libraries are old, dusty places. We think that a more future-oriented image of libraries is something that is going to help us to affect what is a public perception that in some degrees has been working against us. One of the things we've been talking about at this conference and just over the last couple of months is that if we go back 5 years, you were constantly seeing stories about, will libraries survive in an internet age? Will libraries survive now that we have e-books? And we are happy to report that we're not getting stories like that, and we're not getting questions like that. People seem to have figured out that libraries, in fact, are very, very important. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. Last, I'm going to just report on one specific. The Workforce Investment Act is currently being reauthorized. There is a bipartisan bill that contains provisions that will, for the first time, make libraries as eligible providers for library employment-related services, including various kinds of support for information literacy and literacy services. This is something that ALA has been working on for 10 years and which we thought would never happen. This is a bipartisan bill. It was passed 2 days ago by the Senate. It is going to the House. Obviously, you know, anyone who knows what will happen in the House can go out there and please play a slot machine for me. But the fact of the matter is, this is looks like it's going to actually pass and will open up for the first time literally billions, and certainly for libraries, millions of dollars in support for the kind of work that we're doing on a day-to-day basis. We've already talked with IMLS and with COSLA, the Chief Officers Group, about how when this bill passes and is signed by the President, we can begin to get information out to help libraries look at how they can then fit into their statewide plans and benefit from what is an enormous source of federal funding that has been denied to libraries previously. So I want to really thank the Washington Office, the Committee on Legislation, and all of the members that worked tirelessly on this for a whole decade, because at this point, we are, I think, on the brink of success. So that concludes my report. Any questions?
Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Councilor at Large. Thank you, Keith, for your interesting review. I have a very specific sort of question about your presentation on the midwinter-focused activities on advocacy. My concern is that really as sort of an observer right now of our advocacy efforts is that we're really all over the place. We have a committee on legislation, and even the title of the committee speaks to how we used to think about public policy issues, all legislatively focused. But if you sit in on Committee on Legislation's activities, it's all over the place. It's regulatory. It's policy. It's other things that go way beyond legislation. We have OITP doing advocacy and policy and actually legislation and regulatory things in that same universe. We have an advocacy committee doing other kinds of advocacy-related training, hopefully on a different scale and in a different way. I hope that if we have a midwinter discussion that it is very in the weeds, specific to how we should we structure a public policy apparatus to be most effective in moving our program forward. Because right now it seems to be very fractured. And I'm hoping that maybe an outcome of the discussion is not to come away with what we usually come away with. Advocacy is important. It's number one on the list. Let's do more of it. But how can we, in fact, figure out how the resources within ALA can maybe be redesigned, refocused? Councillor Kagan on the list recently made some fascinating, in my mind, observations about how we communicate internally and otherwise about the legislative activities and the lobbying activities that we undertake after council takes some action. Is that effective? Are there better ways of doing that? What are the levels of transparency? What are the levels of accountability that we should be thinking about? And I'm sort of going on here a little bit, probably too much. We need to get into the weeds. This can't be a general discussion. It needs to really look at the charges of some of the committees that we have. If they need to be restructured or reorganized, let's do that. But we really need to put our money where our mouth is in terms of advocacy. And it isn't necessarily that we just need more of it, but we need to figure out how we can be most effective with the resources we have. Thank you.
If I can just respond, I think that part of what we're trying to do is to put everything on the table and look at how we can make changes where they need to be made. So I appreciate the level of the thought that you've brought to this. This is exactly the kind of thing that we need to be discussing. One of the things, the structure, the level of support, we're opening ourselves up to this, and I think we really want to come out with something that works even better. So please don't stop, and I know that you won't. We need to continue this discussion, because if there is a way in which we can make it better, this is the time. We need to do it.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Keith. At the 1985 midwinter meeting, council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document 16.1 through 16.2 and call upon Rodney Hershberger, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. Rod?
I'm used to standing up here, but I'm not used to clicking my way through, so I hope I know how to do this. So Keith just told me a little while ago I was going to have to click today for the first time. And thank you very much, Keith, for your collaboration always, and thank you all for coming here. I want to change the focus of the trustees' report slightly this year and go back to why we have an endowment. I'll get to the investment returns later on. But if you have my report, There are documents, like everything else in ALA, which guide the endowment, what the trustees do with it, and where the returns go. So the purpose of the endowment long-term investment fund is to protect and grow the investment resources and to support the current and future association needs, including scholarships, awards, unique programs that build a strong future for the American Library Association and America's libraries. The investment policy outlines the goals and investment objectives of the American Library Association long-term portfolio, also known as the endowment fund. This document is intended to provide guidelines for managing the long-term investment and to outline specific policies that govern how these goals are to be achieved. This statement, among other things, describes appropriate risk, specifies asset allocation policy, establishes investment guidelines, specifies the criteria for evaluating performance of managers, defines the responsibility of trustees, executive boards, and other parties in the long term. Income from the endowment supports a variety of programs and activities carried out by the association. That's what I want to highlight here. Annually, the trustees set a draw level that is a percentage of each asset category. And that means that we say to the, or we recommend the executive board, who says to all the stakeholders, you can take out a certain percentage of your balance to fund your program. And for the last couple of years, it's been 5% since the markets have been performing well. And the 5% draw for this current year includes Spectrum Scholarships, Carnegie Medal, Schneider Family Book Award, Geisel Award, General Scholarships, and General Administrative Operating Support. So the endowment makes up, what, Keith, 4, 5, 6% of the general fund, somewhere in there? So it is a nice portion of revenue that supports the general fund. In the past few months, YALSA and the association has been working with the Margaret Edwards Trust to take over the assets of that trust. Margaret Edwards was a longtime champion of teen and young adult reading in the Enoch Pratt Free Library of Baltimore. She established the trust in 1989, and the purpose of the trust is to promote free reading by teenagers and young adults. Since supporting teen reading is one of YALSA's basic tenets, it has long been a booster and recipients of funds in support of the trust purpose. The original trustees have gotten quite elderly and decided to end their participation in the management of the trust. They felt YALSA would be a good steward for the original purpose of the trust going forward. In the past, the trust has provided funds for an annual award of about $1,000 for best adult literature program and so forth. Projects currently under consideration include Teen Book Finder app, Teen Read Week activities, and YALSA's annual list of recommended reading. The association, the accounting office, finance office, still in the process of getting all the funds transferred, but it'll be close to $1 million when it all comes in. These funds have been added to the endowment. They will be invested with all other endowment funds. And that's important, I think, because for YALSA, if you have nearly $40 million to invest, you have a lot more options than you have if we have just $1 million. But you also will get an annual accounting of the funds, and of course they'll get the income, which should be about $50,000 a year, that their management and leadership can decide how to spend. I think we all know the markets have been performing well lately, but there may be some things to point out. The markets have been fairly stable in 2014. Fixed income is performing better than in recent years. Housing continues its steady improvement. And on the negative side, at least so far, the continued unrest and civil war in the Middle East has not destabilized markets yet, but it could. And the House of Representatives moving farther to the right, as Keith alluded, could harden the federal government logjam later in the fall, and budget shutdown in the fall is a greater possibility. Now, I will review market performance calendar year through May. Following 2013, spectacular performance. Through May of this year, the endowment's return was 3.1%. If this trend continues, we can hope for an annual return of between 6 and 8%. Historically, this level of return would be good. If you look at the world market performance, you can see that ALA, next slide, please, is doing well. Final slide shows the asset the allocation among various asset categories. The trustee's position matches that of other successful endowments like ours, that asset allocation is more important than individual performance over time. Having the right mix of assets will yield better performance. And then finally, I wanted to show you a slide that, this one. It shows the percentage of the total that all these different areas have. Life membership has one, the future fund, which is more or less ALA's general fund, Carnegie Spectrum scholarships, awards, and finally the divisions, which have almost 20% of the total. So these are the kind of the asset holders in that, and of course we will add Margaret Edwards to that in future reports. So I think our endowment's doing well. We are somewhat at the vagaries of the market, but as I said, we invest in a broad class of assets, and we should be protected. We did very well in the downturn of 2008, so we'd probably trail a little bit going up, but I think that suits our more conservative nature. And that concludes my report.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hershberger? Microphone 4.
Al Kagan, member and CERT counselor. So I know recently I've found out that there are 6 bundled funds in the endowment, and we talked about fossil fund divestment last year, and I think we would like, some people in CERT would like to see what those bundles are, and I'm wondering if you could make those bundles, the contents of those bundles, available to us, and actually if you could note fossil fuels in there, that would be very helpful to us.
I'm not sure what you refer to by bundles, but if you could tell me more specifically what it is you're asking, that would help address the question.
So I think what I heard was that there are 6 different managed funds.
Is that what you mean, the managed funds?
Yes. There's 6 different advisors or 6 different, yeah. For example, London Company, Merrill Lynch, Lord Abbott.
Lord Abbott. Okay, I understand what you mean now.
So could we see what's in each of those funds, and could we find out what kind of percentage of fossil fuels we have in each of those?
I certainly can ask. I don't know how easy that is, and I'm not being evasive when I say that, but I will ask and see whether the people want to identify, the managers want to identify which ones are involved in fossil fuels. I don't know. I think the best you'd get is a list of companies, and you could go from there.
Okay, well, whatever we can get, we would like to see it.
All right, I will ask.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If there are no further questions, thank you, Rod.
Sorry for the slip up on the clicker. I'll practice next time.
At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council document number 33.1 and call upon Patricia A. Wan, Chair of BARC, to present her report. Pat?
Thank you, Barbara. Good afternoon. I am pleased to bring you this report from the Budget Analysis and Review Committee. We have 2 objectives today. First, to inform the council and membership on the financial health of American Library Association. And our second objective is to orient the members of Planning and Budget Assembly on the various financial issues. So listen up, PBA members, because this report will not be repeated tomorrow afternoon. And now I'll try my hand at this clicker. I invite you to spend time with BARC's written report, which is both online and your yellow BARC document, or CD document, excuse me, 33.1. In the next few minutes, I'll cover some of the highlights from that report, recent BARC activities, the ALA revenue sources, FY 2014 budget with the year-to-date update and the year-end projections, and then a summary and questions. I'll hit five highlights from the report. We discussed these topics in the spring and again some of them at our meeting here in Chicago. The first topic, the Planning and Budget Assembly, the committee BARC reviewed the results of the survey of the Planning and Budget Assembly members provided by counselors Karen Schneider, Aaron Dobbs, and analyzed by Karen Downing. Thank you very much to the three of them and to the number of PBA members who took the time to respond to that survey. The information was very helpful to the committee. The committee discussed many suggestions to improve the effectiveness of PBA and concluded with the following adjustments to recommend, and again, a few of the highlights. PBA members will be encouraged to use the ALA Connect as their primary communication platform. President-elect Young and Treasurer Gonzalez sent a letter instructing all PBA members how to adjust their own profiles so that emails will be sent to them when there is activity on the site. We will maintain the traditional hour and a half a session to conduct our business for PBA, and the majority of the session will be devoted to planning-related issues. The orientation and updates of PBA will take the form of various reports issued through the year and also during this information session to save time for those discussions during the PBA assembly. Second, we talked about the division leaders and BARC joint meeting, and that happens during each of the midwinters and annual conferences. It gives BARC and division leaders the opportunity to share financial information and concerns, and the director of member services will solicit and does solicit agenda items from division leadership that will appear at that meeting, as does BARC contribute agenda items. We revert this council to the hour-long session for that important meeting. Third, we addressed a resolution. Whoops, excuse me, I advanced too quickly here. Addressed the resolution from council that was presented by the RUSA division counselor regarding a request to allow programs at midwinter meeting. The resolution, BARC reviewed the resolution, discussed the ramifications, and decided to refer the resolution to the committee on conferences so that a broad discussion could be had on that topic, and the committee on conference is addressing it during this meeting and will refer their recommendations to BARC, which we will review in the fall, and we expect to come back at midwinter to council with a report on that resolution. Again, BARC's responsibility here is to look at the financial implications of any changes we initiate in midwinter. Fourth, our ALA financial practices. Our goal is always to try to inform members on financial practices in the association. Several routine activities are listed on your written report, and I want to highlight again the webcasts that we have in place to address basic information. Those webcast tutorials are found on the treasurer's website of ALA Connect. Several members on BARC as well are looking at, are working with our ALA staff to compile a handbook of financial policies and practices, which I believe will be helpful for many of us across the association when we have that once in place. Moving to the second item in our agenda today, some physical facts. Again, it always helps to remind ourselves what are the dates of ALA's fiscal year. 2014, for example, runs from September 1 until 2013 to August 31st, 2014. And today I'm reporting on the first 8 months of activity in that, but in our current budget year. Your elected treasurer and BARC members are charged to keep our eyes on 3 fiscal years every during any one time. One is the past fiscal year, which in our case this year is fiscal 2013. We monitor the expenditures on the current fiscal year 2014, and we begin work with various bodies, including the executive board, on allocations for 2015. Let's move ahead and look at the revenue sources that were finalized with the close of 2013. I think this image gives us a good idea of the way our various revenue sources come to the association. Publishing accounted last year for 34% of our revenues across the board. Meetings and conferences accounted for 22%. Membership dues for 17%, and grants and awards for 14%. All of these income sources are dependent upon the general economy, libraries' budgets, members' employment and security and salaries, and the health, of course, of the publishing industry. In other words, ALA lives in the real world, and just like you and your libraries and your personal lives, it is affected by trends and activities in that real economic world. I want to move to the third item on our agenda, and that is to look at some of the figures of our first 8 months of operation during fiscal year 2014. But before I do that, I'm going to pause and take a quick swallow of water. Thank you for that, for your patience. Okay, so this ends, our first 8 months ended on April 30th, 2014. Our total, now this is for the whole organization. Total revenue at that time was $31.2 million, which was less than our budget of $32.4 million. Our total expenses across the board were $30 million, which also was less than the budget of $33 million. So for that time period, there across the organization, there was an excess of revenues over expenses of $1.1 million. Cash and investments were $19.5 million, which was more than year-to-date last year by $2.5 million. And the endowment fund at that time in April was $37.4 million. And we just saw from our long-term investment report that that figure has already gone up to $38 million, over $38 million. So moving to the next slide here, we're looking now at the general fund, which is one of the three, one might think, say the three big accounts that we track carefully through the year. The general fund revenues were $15.7 million, which was less than the budget by $1.1 million. And the publishing revenues were down, but they were at $8.5 million, which was less than budget of $870,000. Our dues income was $3.7 million, less than the budget by $198,000. The general fund expenses were $16.6 million, also less than budget by $1.3 million. So we are saving money through our own careful monitoring of our expenditures, and this decrease in our budgeted expenses helps to compensate for the revenue picture. We had then an excess expenses over revenues of $844,000. This compares to the year-to-date loss of $2.2 million for the same time last year. Moving to our second big account, divisions, year-to-date again as of April, our revenues in divisions were $11.5 million, more than budget by $168,000. Revenues were a mixed bag for divisions. We saw year-to-date increases over budget in both ALSC and PLA for various reasons, and other divisions had some budget shortfalls also for various reasons. But the division expenses were $10.2 million, which also was less than budget by $1 million. So divisions are also working to stay within their budgets and still remain viable and very productive. There was an excess revenue over expenses of $1.4 million. And last, our roundtables. The revenues were nearly $220,000, which was less than budget by $15,000, and their expenses at $43,000, less than budget by $140,000. But all of that speaks to the variables of when income comes and when we pay the expenses. And so this looks like a normal report in that respect. Roundtable expenses were lower than budget due to the lower conference-related expenses that had yet to be encountered, yet to be paid. So the excess revenues over expenses were $177,000. Now, a quick projection, a look at the projections for the general fund. As of April, we're projecting, and again, we're using some of our new financial support software to help make these calculations. We've adjusted the projection. You can see our projection is lower than we had originally budgeted, both for revenues and for expenses, and we expect to be able to end the year, shall we say, in the black, as we say in technical budgeting terms. Okay, before I invite your questions, I would like to acknowledge the work and membership of the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, and I'm going to name their names if they're in the room. Will they please raise their hands so that you can see who they are? Laurie Getch, Ann Martin, John Mormon, Jim Neal, Joanne Pinder, and two of our members, Winston Tabb, is representing all of us at the WIPO meetings this week in Geneva. And Janice Welburn is another member who I hope might be here with us today. Is Janice here? And Mario Gonzalez, our treasurer, is unfortunately not able to be at conference this year. And I want to make a special recognition. The entire committee joins me in acknowledging a member of the ALA Finance Office, Elaine Klimek. Elaine, would you be willing to stand? Elaine is retiring after giving ALA 30 years of service. Elaine has worked tirelessly, patiently, and quietly always to make the work of BARC complete and seamless. Thank you, Elaine, so much for all you've given us. And I also want to thank other members of the ALA finance staff, Keith Brown, Denise Moritz, Joanne Lee, and they are here too. Raise your hands, please. And thank you. And Greg Calloway, the director of the office, is missing ALA this year because, for the first time in probably nearly 30 years, because of surgery that he had recently. But he's doing very well. So, enough of that. Are there questions?
Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Thank you, Pat, for your report on behalf of BARC. Keith, in his earlier report, and Barbara in hers, talked about the Center Institute for Library Innovation. Can you give us some insights into the funding for that and what that looks like going forward in terms of the support for that initiative?
Good question. Technically, we could say that will be coming out of the 2015 budget, but I'm going to let Keith address that now since you brought it up.
Hi, Bernie. The budget for 14 is covered through a combination of ALA General Fund and support from IMLS for an establishment grant. And I think the total budget is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $45,000. For next year, the budget will be in the neighborhood of about $140,000, of which that'll consist of some general fund, continued support on the year two of the IMLS grant, and some sponsorship support that we're going to be looking at. And we've had a lot of interest in this, so based on the museum model, they've been very successful at attracting additional support for that. So there is a component of that built in as well.
Microphone 4.
Karen Schneider, Councilor at Large. Thank you for the excellent report. I'm still, perhaps others are more aware of this than I am, but I'm unclear on the general fund projections. What is behind the 1.127613 variance for the revenue? What's driving the gap between what was projected, what was budgeted, and what you think we'll actually end up with?
Good question. I'm going to let Keith work on that too.
Thank you. There are actually two numbers, and we're talking about the slide, the general fund slide here. Any chance you can get that back, Keith? Each year when we set the budget, we start 18 months in advance of the year. So at this point, we generally in March will do a mid-year projection. So the $1.1 million has a couple of components. And remember, when we set a budget, the dues is probably the most reliable portion of our budget, and that's about, 15% of the overall budget. So you're trying to guess how many books are you going to sell, how many people are going to show up at conference 18 months from now. So there is a high level of uncertainty. I would have to say that back before the recession, you could generally add 2% and be on pretty firm ground because things move ahead at a pretty steady pace. It has been a little bit more unpredictable over the course of the last couple of years. So the $1.1 million in projected revenue adjustment in the projection is there's a dues component to it, and that should be about $200,000. There is a publishing component, and that's about $800,000. And there is a interest income component, which is about $200,000 lower than originally projected. On the expense side, publishing is interesting because basically about if you don't, a great deal of publishing revenue is consumed by expenses. So a great deal of the cost reductions consist of the fact that if you don't sell a book, you don't have to produce it, and that reduces the costs. And that's probably about, I'm going to guess, 65% of the reduction just comes in the fact that you haven't had to undertake a production. In the bottom line, which is the excess of revenues, expenses over revenues, where it shows a minus 844, that's a timing issue. If you look at the big pie chart, $11 million is conference revenue, and about $3 million of that is midwinter. The other $8 million is annual conference. So basically, we spend, but most of ALA's revenue comes in during the latter part of the year because that revenue is not recognized until conference is actually held. So you'll see that if you look at the cash flow for the general fund, it's going to be in a negative until we hit conference, and then we pick it up at the end of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 13.1, and I again call upon Pat Wan to present the ALA Treasurer's Report on behalf of ALA Treasurer Mario M. Gonzalez, who was unable to attend this meeting. Pat?
Thank you. I bring you heartfelt greetings from Mario Gonzalez, who would be much rather be here with us than healing a knee. On his behalf, as BARC chair, I'm offer you the treasurer's report. Whereas the BARC report focused on the past and the current situation, the treasurer's report looks forward to the upcoming fiscal year. Our topics will be the programmatic priorities, the strategic initiatives and highlights that affect the budget planning, and the fiscal 2015 preliminary budget, and we'll end with a look at the budget ceiling for the coming year. The programmatic priorities are those key action items that you know so well from that brochure that has the ALA strategic plan in it. And those are the underlying guiding focus for our budget planning. And then this year, we're also looking at strategic initiatives, advocacy, professional and leadership development, information policy at all governmental levels. There are some highlights listed here. I won't go into all of them, but I would like to mention a couple. The annual conferences in the coming year is going to be in San Francisco. Midwinter will be in Chicago, and in the ACRL National Conference will be in Portland, Oregon. We expect all three of those cities to be good revenue generators for our meeting space. Also, 2015 is what we call a spend-down year for two divisions. AASL and PLA both have national conferences in 2016, the following year. So 2015 for them is a spend-down year, and we see that reflected in the division budgets. Another important component of planning the budget this year is to allocate a 2% increase to ALA staff salaries. They have not seen an increase in their salaries, base salaries, for 2 years. And then we have several other key initiatives that have emerged from our planning process with members. We expect to invest an additional $250,000 in technology initiatives that are related to the various strategic efforts that we're focusing on. And one of those strategic efforts that I want to draw your attention, the second bullet item from the bottom of the written page, is to establish an ALA Center for the Future of Libraries, a very exciting undertaking that Keith mentioned a few minutes ago. Let's move to the preliminary budget for 2015. Again, this will begin September 1, 2014, and runs until August 31st, 2015. Budget planning began at ALA with staff and member leaders allocating funds according to the priorities established by the strategic plans. And this budget was reviewed by BARC thoroughly at its spring meeting and recommended to the executive board. At Council 3 on Tuesday, I will bring to you the budgetary ceiling for action and approval on. The budgeted reviews, this slide has flipped the chronological order of the years so that you can focus on the new year coming forward, 2015, and compare it to the budget that we are living in right now in 2014. Look at the second and the third columns and go to the bottom line. You can see that we're being conservative in planning for revenue, budgeting less revenue overall in fiscal 2015 than in the current year, nearly $1.2 million less than the $50.6 million that we budgeted this year. The figures in red are those areas where we expect to earn less revenue next year than we had budgeted this year. Specifically, of course, you can see membership dues, sales of books and graphics, meetings and conferences, and other miscellaneous areas. At the same time, we're projecting modest growth in other sales, in subscriptions, advertising, grants, and awards. Let's take a quick look at expenses for the upcoming year. On the payroll line, that first line, the increase in expenses addresses that executive board mandate to give ALA staff a 2% increase in their base salaries in 2015. By the red figures in the differences column, you can see that we continue to cut expenses in travel, in publishing, and in operations. As I said earlier, we are a lean operation, and we are budgeting very conservatively. General fund reserves and expenses, you see here a three-year comparison of those, and we were pleased to end FY 2013 with revenues more than covering expenses. We expect to end 2015 with a projected net revenue of nearly $129,000. This is a quick look at the bottom line here for budgeted revenues of the general fund shows an increase in projected revenue of nearly $737,000. The modest growth is expected again in sales, subscriptions, advertising, etc. This shows a line graph of the same data interesting to see it in that form. Now, looking quickly at the expenses, were there general fund expenses are expected to be $600,000 more in 2015 than 2014. And again, that reflects primarily our salary increases and the projected expenses for conferences. Again, another line graph illustrating the same thing, the same general trends that we saw in revenue generation over the past 10 years. Another look at general fund revenue producing units, publishing and meetings and conferences, two of our big revenue sources. Quickly looking at division revenues and expenses, this is another three-year comparison. You can see that divisions have budgeted to spend more than they take in 2015. That reflects that spend down year. Roundtable revenues and expenses, here illustrated in your report. And I want to end with a quick look at the budgetary ceilings that we're expecting in each of our major accounts, with a total for the association at just slightly over $64 million. Thank you very much from Mario and me. Thank you for your interest in the non-tangible as well as the financial support and your own contributions to those areas. We are a vital and healthy organization, and we do a lot besides what is illustrated by the dollar figures. We make a lot of contributions, and our markers include the diversity of our membership, the activities that are carried out, and the invaluable contributions of divisions, roundtables, committees, chapters, and interest groups. I'm happy to entertain questions on this if we have time. I know our time is clicking away here.
Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Pat, a.k.a. Mario, thank you for your report. I haven't asked this question in a long time, but I think it's appropriate given the challenges of the economy that we're in. Should we have a requirement of a balanced budget where our expenses cannot in any way exceed our revenue? What would be the implications of that for ALA? Is that something that should be, that BARC should be thinking about?
One of the things that's important for us to do as an organization is to comply with standard accounting principles. We are audited every year according to standard principles, and a balanced budget is part of the expected standard practice for an organization like this. But I'm also going to allow Keith to respond to that question if he has additional things to comment on.
The overall ALA budget for 15 is not balanced. It's a deficit budget. And if you look at the trend data over years, because it's a spend down year, it means the PLA and ASL are actually incurring expenses related to their conferences. So you'll have a deficit budget on the overall ALA budget every other year. Balanced budget is really, I think, a discipline within the general fund because, in fact, we try and make sure that every tub rests on its own base, if I can say that. If the resources are not there, again, if we're dealing with a one-year emergency, we had SARS at one point, we had Hurricane Katrina, then I think we would consider not having a balanced budget. But I think overall, the general commitment has been that we do try and obviously engage in good work that generates revenue, but at the same time, try and maintain the discipline of trying to say, this is the ALA we can support. And I think that overall, again, that's a discipline and a philosophy.
We are running out of time. I will let the two people presently at the microphones to ask your questions, but there won't be any additional time. Microphone four.
Member at large, I've never asked this question before. Is it possible, would you consider showing us how the personnel budget relates to our goals and objectives? I don't think we've ever had that kind of information before.
That would certainly take a different kind of a report than what we generally see here, although there are detailed reports that are released on a monthly basis to our staff. Keith, do you want to?
I would just say that we're looking at that.
Yeah.
If we have, as we look at it, we'll share information.
Right. Good. Okay. Keith said we can look at that, and as we look at it, we'll share information.
Microphone seven.
Jennifer Boucher, RUSA counselor. On the second slide, you showed about priorities. One of those priorities was a center for advocacies in relationship to the question that Bernie had. Is this going to be looking at that center? Is it going to increase or decrease and try to consolidate a little bit more of the advocacy costs?
It's a priority for us to address this year, and I personally have not compared what we spent for advocacy last year over what we're spending for advocacy overall. As we know, it is spread in a number of areas across the division, across the organization. There are offices, there are divisions that carry it out. There are lots of areas where we spend money to promote advocacy of the multiple types that we undertake as an organization.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much for stepping in, too, at the last minute. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for announcements.
I've already talked about advanced registration, so there are no other announcements.
Thank you. He skipped several pages.
Wait.
Okay, thank you, Keith. It is now slightly past 4:30. I'm sorry that I didn't manage well. The ALA Council, Executive Board, and Membership session now stands adjourned. And the ALA Membership meeting will begin immediately in this room. Immediately, let's give ourselves a couple of minutes.